Welcome to Innovation Alberta, a celebration of science, research, and the inventive spirit. I'm Cheryl Croucher. International Polar Year is well underway, with Canada participating along with many other nations in the world to learn more about what's happening at both the North and the South Poles. Canada's National IPY Steering Committee met in Edmonton recently, and this was an opportunity to compare this polar year to the last one 50 years ago. And it was a chance to catch up on the research program of ArcticNet and a unique youth program called Students on Ice. These stories coming up in the next half hour on Innovation Alberta. International Polar Year got its launch on March 1st. Canada is just one of many nations around the world that is concentrating a huge scientific effort on learning more about the North and South Poles. Of course, an undertaking of this size takes tremendous coordination. The National Steering Committee of Canada's IPY effort met in Edmonton recently, and I caught up with the group at a soiree hosted by Arctic researcher Dr. David Hick. Among the guests was Dr. Ian Church. Ian is a senior science advisor with the Yukon Territorial Government, and he's the chair of the National IPY Committee. This is not the first International Polar Year for Ian. He was a youngster during the previous global event, which was held 50 years ago.
I was actually in elementary school, during what was known as the International Geophysical Year, which was actually the third International Polar Year. It was in 1957-58, so that probably ages me. We had a teacher that was very much interested in geography, interested in the North, and used to talk about various things that were going on during the IGY. All of major media, the magazines, were carrying stories of the International Geophysical Year. Also, There were, I've now found out, many media productions that they ran in the school, films, posters, and what have you, that were actually IGY posters. Some of them I actually remember. I didn't associate them with the International Geophysical Year until I got re-involved in this. But once I did, I started realizing, oh yeah, that's true. I saw that. And in fact, it did influence me to go into sciences. So I think this whole idea of the International Geophysical Year helping drive the development of Canada's science capacity is truth. I've read that the year before the IGY, Canada graduated, for instance, one PhD geographer. When I went to university in the mid-60s, we had very few Canadian professors. And yet the schools, and there were a lot of new universities at that time, being driven by the baby boom, there were a lot of Canadians that were going through grad school. And I remember thinking, geez, it's kind of strange that we have a lot of American professors, a lot of British professors, a lot of European professors, just not a lot of Canadians. And I think the IGY, I haven't got sort of chased this hard enough yet to find the statistics, but I think it really did launch Canada's current, at least in the natural sciences, that whole generation of people going into those natural sciences.
What do you think was the excitement about it? Especially it made an impression on you.
Well, I've always been interested in my case in terms of wilderness, the stuff going on and the work going on in the Antarctic, the High Arctic. There was actually, in the International Geophysical Year, there was work going on throughout the world. It was the first year people actually surveyed on a global basis the oceans of the world, so all the hydrographic surveys. Many of the things that came out of that were, in truth, very exciting. I remember in the early 70s being really excited about plate tectonics. I never realized that sort of understanding of how the Earth works was a direct spin-off of all the hydrographic work that was done during the IGY. But just that level of activity. There were other things that actually happened that I wasn't aware of part of the IGY, but we all paid attention. Didn't matter who you were. The space race, the competition between the Americans and the Russians once Sputnik went up.
This is now 50 years later, and we're into the launch of the International Polar Year. What do you see as being the difference in Canadian science now as we look towards what's happening at the poles in both the North and the Antarctic?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. Firstly, we don't have a big Antarctic program. I think that's a concern that we all share, because I think we can learn a lot from what is going on in the Antarctic, both technologically and in terms of relationships to the, you know, to the polar, the other pole, the pole that we actually own a major chunk of territory in. I think there is now a much larger Canadian presence in the Arctic in terms of science. There really wasn't much last time. A big change is that the people of the polar regions, or in the north, where I now live, are actually involved. This was unheard of. And what I think really has changed, really in the last decade, is that there's a lot more science capacity from northerners, be they of whatever ancestry. A lot more kids have grown up in the north, have gone back to school, have pursued professional careers. So we have them participating, helping set the agenda. I think the other thing that's really changed is we aren't in a Cold War. The last polar year was held in the Cold War during a period when the West and the East were in a state of very, the tension was there. One of the most fantastic things that happened out of that was, even though the camps, let's say in Antarctica, we had the KGB and the Russian camps, and we had the CIA and the American camps, not part of the IGY, they were the other folks in the camp that no one quite knew why they were there, but the scientists cooperated to a degree, and they collaborated, and out of that, they came up with a political agreement, which is the Antarctic Treaty System. So there was an entirely new and innovative governance system that came out of the IGY as a result of people working together.
You have a gathering now of the National Committee for IPY. What are you hoping to accomplish at this one?
Well, a couple of things. Firstly, we've gone through this planning thing, this planning stage. We're still in planning, and in fact, we probably won't finish planning until it's over. But we're now moving into operations, so some of the questions you raised in terms of, let's say, data and what have you, we've got to get all that stuff ironed out. One of the things that happened this time, last IGY, they spent 7 to 8 years planning it. In truth, this one, we spent about two and a half. So we've had to do things very quickly to get geared up and get this thing up and running. We've been amazingly successful. But now that we've been so successful, people were expecting maybe 40 projects. The first call for proposals, they got 1,200. So this has blown past anyone's original expectation. We've got a youth steering committee, both at the national level, at the international level. All these things have to be coordinated. So try to figure out how to, streamline things within limited resources during the operational phase, and then really the phase down. And develop a vision of that legacy that we want to leave, whatever it be. One of my visions is that everyone on Earth, by the time the IPY is finished, will understand that they have a citizenship responsibility for the polar regions. We are all hooked to this Earth, and we are all citizens of the poles. So how we get there, it's interesting. We've got nations in tropical Africa that are part of the Youth Steering Committee, that are plugged into IPY. So we've already started. There are countries like Bangladesh. People say, Bangladesh, polar? Well, whatever happens in the polar regions is going to affect the water levels in Bangladesh, and they're all sitting there very close to sea level. So they're all, in fact, citizens of the pole.
Thank you very much.
You betcha. Have a good day.
That was Dr. Ian Church, Chair of Canada's National Committee for International Polar Year. One of the major research agencies involved in International Polar Year is ArcticNet. ArcticNet is one of Canada's networks of centres of excellence. Established in 2004, ArcticNet is based at the University of Laval in Quebec, and it involves the participation of researchers from across the country. Dr. Martin Fortier is the executive director of ArcticNet, and one of the biggest research assets ArcticNet has for International Polar Year is its floating lab, and this is a refitted icebreaker called the Amundsen.
What's it like? It's nice. Good food. It's actually, it's called the King and Coast Guard ship Amundsen, named after the famous Roald Amundsen, first person to cross the Northwest Passage in 1903 to 1906. So it used to actually be called the Sir John Franklin, who didn't make it to the Northwest Passage, I guess. But in 2002, our research consortium, about 43, I think, universities and international colleagues applied to the Canada Foundation for Innovation. They had a special program for very large international infrastructures. And we got $27 million to refit the Amundsen and the Franklin and turn it into the Amundsen. But it was not only to refit the ship. Actually, a minute amount of that money was used to refit the ship and bring it back to par. What's really interesting is that about one-third of that money was used to buy state-of-the-art equipment and also built labs and very specific things like an internal moon pool that allows us to deploy instruments from within the ship when we're surrounded by ice, dynamic positioning system, really making it one of the best and most versatile research icebreakers in the world. So that was funded in 2002, and already in 2003, its inaugural voyage was the Canadian Arctic Shelf Exchange Study funded by the NSERC. And where the ship overwintered in the Beaufort Sea for 12 months, making it probably the largest expedition ever conducted. And this will probably be breaking next year as part of IPY, where the Amundsen is going to leave for 15 months for an ArcticNet / IPY expedition. Again, and very diversify in the fact that we're going to run the Circumpolar Flyleaf project, but also an Inuit health survey, where the ship is going to be transformed in a floating human health clinic and is going to visit every community in Nunavut and every coastal community in Inuvialuit and also every coastal community in Nunatsiavut as a follow-up to a 2004 survey in Nunavik. So that means that since 2004, the Amundsen will have visited and sort of studied the health of Inuit in every coastal community in Canada.
What kinds of things are you looking at in terms of health?
Well, the health survey is really on a voluntary basis. So typically the ship is brought as close as possible to community. And the survey is aimed specifically at Inuit households on a voluntary basis. They're brought on board the ship. And they go through a suite of different tests. A lot of it is questionnaires on either mental health or their normal health habit, eating habits, and things like that. And a lot of the work is being done with Inuit interpreters and researchers on board. We also have earring tests. We have, obviously, blood sampling for all types of disease testing, chronic disease. And there's things, I'm not a health specialist also, but carotid thickness and all, you know, a suite of tests. And in 2004, they also offered, we set up one of the labs as actually a mammogram, and we offered breast screening, which is not available in the north in many communities. So that was really appreciated. Again, on a voluntary basis, these are services really that were offered. But the actual health survey really establishes the state of health in those communities, in Inuit communities. And the goal is to, this is part of an international cohort, so similar studies are being done in Greenland and also in Russia. And it's really an international Inuit health survey. And the goal is to ultimately lead to policy and recommendations on health.
What other research are you going to be doing with the icebreaker?
Well, obviously the icebreaker, when it's not doing a health survey, its main use is to do ocean-related studies. So one of the main, goals of ArcticNet, because of this potential 14-year window, is to establish these observatories. So when we're talking about climate change, we need, you can't talk about climate change with a one-year observation. So you need these long-term data series. and with the CFI grant and actually we just got a new grant to increase our equipment. We are deploying these moorings, oceanographic moorings that are recording physical and chemical and biogeochemical properties of the water column in different areas of the Arctic. So we have one observatories of about four of these moorings in the North Water Polynya, which is between Ellesmere Island and Greenland. Another one in Hudson Bay, and another one in the Western Arctic in the Beaufort Sea, Mackenzie Shelf area. So that's one of the purposes of the Amundsen annual expedition. We go maintain these moorings. Basically, they're there all year long while we're not there. They're collecting data, and we have to visit them year after year to actually get them back on the ship, download the data, and put them back in the water. But also, there's a suite of measurement. The Amundsen is equipped with a very high capacity of doing some continuous sampling while the ship is steaming. So on a typical year, we can travel up to 25,000 kilometers with the ship all across the Canadian Arctic. And all the way, we are collecting bathymetry data and atmospheric data and physical properties of the water column, but we also stop. So in a typical year, we'll stop at about 150 to 200 station where we actually sample in detail the water column properties all the way from the bentos to the atmosphere, but also from viruses to whales. So the typical crew is 42 scientists on board the ship, and it's very multidisciplinary integrated research at looking at ecosystemic level of the state of the Canadian Arctic.
How do you keep everybody happy and getting along?
Yeah, I guess that's part of my job. But I don't know if everybody's happy, but we've had amazing success. And not only getting all the natural scientists happy, but it's to try to, I guess, get these people to work together. And that's one of the major challenges, to get natural science to work with health science, but actually, I guess, more challenging with social sciences. And I think when you try, and I think that we've succeeded in this, and we're continuing to work at this, and to get the researchers... researchers tend, and I guess I used to be one of them, less and less now, to get very specialized in what they do, and sometimes to lose that big picture. And now in projects like ArcticNet, where fundamental research, I guess, is not as much valued as research that's going to actually lead to answers to specific issues like adaptation strategies. And we're all, ArcticNet is moving towards these sort of integrated regional impact studies where people have to work together to answer questions and to provide answers. So this helps people work together to realize that they're all, whether they're social scientists or human health scientists, addressing the issue of climate change in the North in collaboration with Inuit and people of the North, you know, it's much more fulfilling than actually just, even though you still have to be very good at what you do in your specific line of research, try to sometimes get back and move away from this very specific and fit in a more general picture, helps people to get along. So every year we have, we now run the ArcticNet Annual Scientific Meeting, which is the largest meeting in Canada. It's the Arctic meeting. It's about 400 people. And it's very refreshing. So one of our objectives is to train this new generation of scientists, and we now have over 230 graduate students. And for people that have been in the Arctic research for a long time, coming to an ArcticNet meeting is very refreshing. So the old boys club is being replaced, and it's refreshing. A lot of women also, actually predominantly female grad student body, which is also refreshing in Arctic research. So things are evolving, and with IPY, it's only going to, you know, add to this rejuvenation of Arctic research in Canada, which is great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
That was Dr. Martin Fortier, Executive Director of ArcticNet and a member of Canada's National Committee for International Polar Year. International Polar Year is a wonderful opportunity for Canada's youth to learn more about the polar regions and what pressing issues like climate change mean to the polar ecosystems. And of course, what better way to learn about this than to actually go visit the penguins and polar bears? Jeff Green is the executive director of a unique expedition program called Students on Ice. Jeff also sits on Canada's National Committee for International Polar Year.
Students on Ice is a program that takes high school students and university students from across Canada and around the world on educational expeditions to both the Arctic and the Antarctic. and they traveled together with teams of scientists and teachers and experts on these expeditions and learn about everything from history, flora, fauna, culture, all the sciences, definitely the environmental issues facing the poles and our globe, really go on these journeys of discovery. It's about looking at the world a bit differently. The polar regions are cornerstones of the global ecosystem, and what we've discovered there is they're the greatest classrooms on Earth. So, yeah, about 8 years ago, it just seemed like a great idea to expose the youth of the world to these two very special and important parts of our planet.
How many kids have you dealt with so far?
Since 1999, we've taken almost 700 youth teachers and scientists on these expeditions to both the poles.
And how do you actually do it?
Well, with a lot of work and passion, but a lot of partnerships. We have support from governments, corporations, foundations, individual students that raise the money themselves to go. And we've been really fortunate with all kinds of partnerships in Canada, from the Museum of Nature to Canadian Geographic and the Canadian Space Agency and on down the line. To put this program together, it has a core education component. We usually charter vessels, ice-class old research ships that become our floating home and classroom and laboratory for the journey. So we either meet the vessel in Argentina and go to the Antarctic from there, or up somewhere up in the Canadian Arctic and explore the Arctic from that gateway. And each day is jam-packed. The kids are involved in lectures, workshops, hands-on science research. They're out touching icebergs, playing with whales and seals, visiting international research bases or communities if it's the Arctic. So it's a jam-packed program, and the kids just totally come back inspired and motivated, thinking that they can change the world and wanting to.
Now, you must be something of an explorer yourself to be doing this.
Well, that's I kind of stumbled onto it all. I've been leading expeditions for all kinds of groups around the world. I've been to the Antarctic 70 some times. The penguins recognize me now when I arrive on the beach. The Arctic 35 times, and I think I've been to almost 80 countries. But one day, standing on the beach in the Antarctic, surrounded by thousands of penguins, and it just occurred to me, like, we really need to expose these places to the next generation, the future leaders. So that's really where the whole Students on Ice thing was born, and I guess it changed my career as a so-called explorer, and now I'm more of a adventure educator.
You've made all these expeditions, 70 to the Antarctic, 35 to the North. What changes have you seen?
Well, we've certainly in the Arctic seen more dramatic changes as a result of global warming. Less sea ice, glaciers that are much smaller than they used to be, even in my short 15 years of visiting these places. Speaking with the elders, the Inuit elders, and hearing their observations on climate change, seeing permafrost. I've been stuck in melted permafrost up to my kneecaps in the Canadian Arctic. So we're really seeing changes like that now, unfortunately, on quite a regular basis. In the Antarctic, the changes haven't been as obvious to the naked eye, but this year on one of my expeditions, for the first time, I can safely say that we definitely saw impacts of global warming, glaciers that had tremendous melt on them in the height of the Antarctic summer. So, yeah, those types of changes. 2 summers ago, I had a bunch of students up in the Arctic, and we came across 25 polar bears that were stranded on these not stranded, but they were hanging out on these rocky islands off of Cumberland Sound on Baffin Island. And normally at that time of year, there was lots of sea ice for these bears, but two summers ago, there was no sea ice, and these bears were essentially waiting for the ice to return in the fall, and they were fasting. And that, to me, really, looking into the eyes of those bears, or having these youth look into the eyes of these bears, in that moment, it made climate change a personal issue for those kids, and they saw the impacts with their own two eyes.
What is Students on Ice going to do for IPY?
Well, a lot, I hope. We've been endorsed as an official component of the IPY program. So we have a series of expeditions planned for the next 3 years to take youth to both the poles on these journeys. So we're pretty excited about that. We're also involved in the organization of an International Polar Year Speakers Series in partnership with Canadian Geographic and the Association of Natural History Museums in Canada. We are trying to make a documentary about how the older generation of polar researchers and explorers are passing the torch now to the next generation of Canadian, in particular Canadian scientists and explorers. And oh boy, lots of things. It's an exciting time. It's wonderful to see the increased attention, not just to the poles, but to the issues like climate change. And we're just hoping to engage and inspire as many youth as we can over the next 3 years, because that's ultimately what the legacy of IPY needs to be.
Thank you very much, Jeff.
Thank you very much.
That was Jeff Green, Executive Director of Students on Ice. He also sits on Canada's National Committee for International Polar Year. That brings Innovation Alberta to a close for this week. The interviews you heard during this program are posted as audio files and as written transcripts on our website at innovationalberta.com. And you can keep up to date on technology and research events by subscribing to our e-newsletter, Innovation Alberta Online. Innovation Alberta is sponsored by the Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research, the University of Lethbridge, Alberta Ingenuity, Alberta Research Council, Genome Alberta, ICOR, the Informatics Circle of Research Excellence, the Alberta Conservation Association, the Sustainable Forest Management Network, and the NSERC Industrial Chair in Integrated Landscape Management. Innovation Alberta is mixed at Riverdale Recorders and is a Porcupine Stone production. I'm Cheryl Crocher.